I change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And here's Dan. All right, welcome. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Dan. I've been sober since December 20th of 1983. Glad I'm here. Excited to be here. I'd like to thank everybody who came, everyone I talked to on the phone. Thanks for coming. This is our second year doing this, and we're excited about it. So I'm just going to kick it off, and we're going to start with Keith. He's the newbie on the list here. Thank you, Dan. Sit. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith. May 11th, 1976. I'm glad to be here. This is a special day. We had this last year, and really grateful for some of the people that came back, and grateful for people that have come here for their first time. There's a special interest, and I'm sure people sober longer than me know that feeling that there's people that I saw when I was new, and we've stayed on the path, and we get opportunities to come back together again and see each other at times like this, and it's really special. I remember when I was new, I thought, you know, I like that guy, and I like that guy, and I like that guy, and they went and got drunk, and I thought, oh, I hate him, and I hate him. Guess what? They're still here. I saw John whenever I was new, and John has been in my corner all the way. Otto's been in, come out. Don Pila was my sponsor for a while. I've had 9 sponsors, and 6 of them are dead. So John's my current sponsor. hey, I tell you what, you know, they all say, I'll teach you how to live and I'll teach you how to die. And those guys taught me how to die with sobriety and with dignity, and they lived it right to the end. Right to the end. I should be so fortunate. And I really want to thank everybody coming. I want to thank the cooks. They did a great job. Thank you very much. I want to thank our archivist for bringing all the archives. Please pay a visit over there. It's very, very interesting, and I really appreciate these guys coming. It's a lot of work, and they set up, and we really appreciate them coming. And that's enough out of me. I'm glad to be here. I want to thank my wife. Sue has 30 years in Al-Anon, and I want to thank her. We've been together 46 years. And I told a guy that yesterday, and he said, how do you do that? And I said, well, I was kind of mean to her, but then they got 911. So now I'm nice. So thank you all for coming, and we'll get on with this deal. Thank you very much. Curtis, you're next. Come on up.
Hey, everybody. My name's Curtis Locke, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. By the grace of a loving God and the things I've learned to do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink in 11,147 days, one day at a time. And I love doing it that way. My sobriety date 3376, if you want to check. My Eskimo in Alcoholics Anonymous was a man by the name of Joe Rhodes. He's passed on, and I try not to forget the words he said to me when I came back in the doors of AA after years of being in and out like a yo-yo, and I told him, I said, you know, I've seen you guys stay sober, but I can't stay sober. It doesn't work for me. And Joe told me, he says, if you try and get into the program, Curtis, instead of being around it like you have been, maybe it'll work for you. And I was able to get into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started running and doing things that Joe asked me to do rather than telling him I didn't have time. And I ran into people like another friend of mine and another Eskimo of mine who used to tell me to just, he said, get in the car, you're not doing anything anyway. And that was Big Book Mac. And we're having a mass there. They are having, his family's having a mass for Mac tomorrow out in Huntington Beach, and they're going to have a memorial service for him next Sunday at the 502 Club. Joe introduced me to Don Peeler, and Don would say, just to be sober, and I used to think, gee whiz, because I would walk in the meetings, and Don was a circus speaker, and I'd see Don up on the podium shaking the big book, and he'd say, hey, it works, and it works good. And I'd turn and walk out, and I'd leave. And every time I leave Alcoholics Anonymous, I always ended up drunk. Not intentionally, that's just the way it went. And Don talked to me later on. Joe introduced me to Don, and Don talked to me about Otto. And today I get to sit in a old-timers meeting with that man as he celebrated his 47th birthday. So you know what? I came in here and I just wanted out of life. And today I can't get enough of life. And I'm extremely grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and this fellowship. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Jesse.
My name's Jesse, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is really, really nice. I've got to tell you about my morning. I got up and I said, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to stay home and I want to stay by myself. And it's because it's my birthday, not my recovery birthday, but it's my birthday. And I don't want to be another year older, I guess. I don't know. I just had a fit. But you know what? I'm really glad to be here today. And I can get up to the podium and say that and not have to, you know, sit over there and pout or something. And I'm good at that. But, you know, AA has been so good to me. My whole entire life is owed to AA. You know, I was from South Gary in Pomona. And when I first got sober, I remember going to the old Triangle Club in Pomona. And that place, I mean, you know, I went there and I thought, oh my God, I don't fit in with these people. I remember this lady, Bobby, she had this big white furry coat on and her hair piled high and all this jewelry. Well, 30 years later, I know Bobby and she doesn't have a white coat on and her hair's not piled high. And you know what? It wasn't like what I thought it was going to be. And when I got here, I didn't know if I wanted to be sober or what. All I knew is that I wanted something different than what I had. I was just a sleazy little alcoholic dope fiend from South Pomona that was 26 years old, living at home with her moms, and had nothing. And today I have a full life, you know, and it's just due to the 12 steps in this program and finding a higher power, who I choose to call God. You know, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for my life, you know, thank you. And this is an awesome place that I'm really glad I come in. It always turns out that way when I don't want to go somewhere and I go, I have a wonderful time. And, you know, I want to thank the people that had a big part in my sobriety. Alberta, John, Pat, Carol, Otto. I remember Otto from a long time ago, and we had all a lot of fun at the Saturday night meeting in Chino, you know, and Sunday morning at the Triangle Club. Alberta and Taylor and I had sat over in the back, and what was that? Gene McEwen would all sit in the corner at the Triangle Club and make fun of people and take everybody's inventory, but we had a ball, you know. And I remember going to a convention with Alberta and hearing Sybil. You know, I got to know some of these people, and Don P. I remember going and hearing him and just crying, because, you know, what a spiritual man. I mean, I'm so fortunate to come into this program when I did. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. Carol?
I'm Carol, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/23/73. 5. I have to remember that. I don't like remembering the year, you know. I'd like to think that I've always been sober, and that wasn't the case. You know, I spent a lot of years drunk, and just recently, just today, fellow that was taking pictures, I forgot his name, but then I'm not good at names, I'm only good at faces. He said, how come there's not that many women that have long-term sobriety? And the only thing I can think is, they didn't drink like I did, you know? If they drank like I did, they'd all be here. You know, I was a bar drinker, sitting on that bar stool, staring in the mirror, waiting to be discovered, you know? And listen to the same sad songs, my God Almighty. Play F4, you know? What a miserable existence, you know? I'm like a lot of women and the men, you know, relationships, didn't know how to do them, thought I did, attempted a few, and said maybe not, you know? In AA, I learned I had poor judgment. You know, that was the problem. It wasn't them. I just had poor judgment, you know. There was a loser out there. God, I wanted him, you know. You know, to the newcomers, you know, we've got a few here today. If you don't think this is important, you know, you're so deadly wrong. This is probably the most important thing you'll ever do in your lifetime. I tried for so many years, you know, too many years. They talk about these slippers that can't get a handle on the program. You know, I tried getting sober since about 1959, you know, and that was a long time ago. And my sponsor and best friend, she's got lots of time ahead of me, and that's okay. But we were young people one time. And we joined this fellowship, and it was called the Young People of Pomona, the Friday night meeting over on Mission. And if nothing else, I made a lot of lifetime friends, and that was something I didn't have. Those people I drank with in the bar, they weren't my friends. My money ran out, so did they, you know. I needed money to recoup for this, that, or the other. Where were they? Nowhere, you know. And in AA, you find a family. You know, I like to think of you as my family. I'm safer in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than I've ever been anywhere in my whole life. It's comfort. It's home. I don't have to pretend. You don't have to pretend. We're all in this together. And what a blessed way to live. I'm glad I was able to come today. I'm glad to be anywhere there's an AA thing going on, you know. Welcome to AA. You guys that are new, I don't know if they're sitting out there in the sun, but they're out there smoking. They're my kind of people, you know. They're still my kind of people somewhere in this world. I've enjoyed it. The food was delicious. Thank you so much.
Ed, pancakes.
My name's Ed, and I'm an alcoholic. I came in to AA. I started in here December, and I'm trying to think of the right time. I came in 10 months before I got sober. Over in down in Pomona, they have a church down here. It's called a Mother Group. And a guy up in San Francisco, I was in a bar up there drinking. I was really hurting. I was just wore out. I'd drink that shit until I couldn't drink no more. And I'd develop gastritis. And I used to heave until I'd feel my butt coming up, you know. And I'd swallow real hard. I used to miss my breakfast and everything. It was embarrassing. I didn't like drink. I wouldn't eat. Curtis said he liked to eat when he drank. The hell with that shit. My old lady, She'd always get pissed off at me. She'd cook a good dinner, and I wouldn't eat her dinner. I was too busy drinking. I'd go hide someplace and get drunk. But I did get to a point after I was in the Navy for 20 years, and then I went into Merchant Marine, and I stayed in there for 5 years, and you could have all the booze you wanted. And I drank all I wanted, but my stomach didn't want it. That gastritis, I could only hold a drunk maybe for a day or two. Some of them last one day, and some of them just wouldn't even last for one drunk. In fact, I got to the point I couldn't get drunk, and I couldn't drink the booze. I couldn't live with it and couldn't live without it. And that's when I went over to the mother group, and I walked in that place there, and all these beautiful people sitting in there, and they're all radiant and everything. And I said, what the hell? I'm in the wrong goddamn place. I got to get out of here. I know this ain't where I'm supposed to be. None of them look like me. So I turned around and went for about 3 more months. And I went back, and I found out what made them people so happy. And it was for accepting a power greater than themselves. And it was awful hard for me. I'm the bewildered one that they talk about in the chapter of the agnostic and the atheist. I couldn't have faith. It wasn't possible. I couldn't imagine having faith in God, you know. It would just burn out of me when I was a kid. Hey, every goddamn body I seen would told me I was going to hell, and I came to believe it. Piss on it. I was ready, you know. And today, maybe that is the reason I do use a little profanity. But in the Navy, is the way we talk. We couldn't even, it's not even English, but we couldn't say anything else. And why I can't get over the Christians getting mad at us speaking that garbage that we speak. They get mad about it. Hell, I'd get mad about it too if I knew what it meant, you know. But anyway, I don't use it too much anymore. And I came in here, Otto was my second sponsor. I asked to be my sponsor. And I love this cat. He took me fishing. Other than coming to AA, I wanted to go fishing next, you know. And we used to go down to Mexico and have some good times fishing down there with Jimmy on. But when I got me a sponsor, and he was a doctor of all people. And I didn't think much of doctors too. They're too goddamn educated, you know. They don't know nothing. Them educated people, they don't even know what to tell you, much less do anything. But, you know, Dr. Al was a very good man. He got married to a nice young lady. They had a child. And Al-Anon started into, Al started into Al-Anon. He went to Al-Anon for 18 years. He never did learn how to live with his wife. And his wife never learned to live with him. They argued with each other until he died, you know. And I guess he went to that big AA meeting wherever he went when he left here. And his wife is still living. But I don't talk to her anymore. She never invited me to his funeral or anything else. And he, like I said, he was my sponsor for about 19 years. And I love that man. He's another man I love. He taught me the hard way to accept spirituality. You act as if, and I did act as if, then it came true to me inside, and I felt it, and I still feel it today, and I don't have to look for him. He's with me, and my God goes every place I go. He goes out there. He must blast me all the goddamn time, bitching that golf ball whenever I hit it. It's supposed to go that way, and it goes that way. And I raised so much hell. I got another friend, 34 years old. 84 years old, 34 years old. 84 years old. And I'm out there, and you know, son of a bitch, he still beats me. I'm only 79 myself, and that's enough time, and thank you for listening to me.
Coach Mike.
I'm Mike Alcoholic, 32174. Keith, you did a hell of a job. You and your crew came to the door, had somebody meet us, came over, set me down. Somebody went and got something to drink. They waited on us, served us pie and everything. I went to the bathroom. I'm going to the bathroom and I finish and I go over and I'm saying, "Where's the towel guy?" Next year. I want everybody to do this. I want you to grab a piece of skin right now. I want you to pinch as hard as you can. Go. Did you feel that? Because I tell you what, I used to do that when I was about 90 proof. And I couldn't feel that. When you're sober, there's a whole other world. And it's called the grace of God. 28 days ago, I was 30 seconds away from dying, clearly dying. And they got the tube down my throat. And my throat was completely full of blood. I closed my eyes and I opened them and I saw these people and I could see some halos. And it was the people in the ROR. And I was not scared because of this program. Because I have been given something. Of all of the millions and millions and millions of people, or billions of people on this earth, we are probably the most fortunate. Because when you walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, that is God forgiving you because you got here. Just one meeting, that's God saying, "I'm forgiving you, and I'm going to give you something. Now what the hell are you going to do about it? Are you going to stay? Are you going to open up your ears? Are you going to turn on your brain? Are you going to become willing? And can you find a way to finally surrender to this horrible, horrible disease?" But it is a wonderful, wonderful recovery. And we are so fortunate. Last thing I'm going to say is, Big Book Mac, I'm sitting there in the 502 Club back in 74. Had about 7-8 months sober. Big Book Mac walks over and he says, "Hey, here's a Big Book boy for you, boy." I said, "Okay, I got your boy." He says, "Turn to page 66. I said, "I know what's on page 66. You know, the inventory." I said, "Well, you know, I'm doing that right now, Mac." You know, he says, "Hey, what did I tell you? Turn to page 66. I said, "Oh, and he said, "Oh, you're not going to do it? Well, you'll be drunk by nightfall." And that's kind of how he did it. And I turned to the page 66, and he had written a little note. He says, "Hey, boy." And that's what he said. "Hey, boy." "Oh, excuse me, coach," he says. "You're now the new secretary at Chino Prison, Thursday night." And that saved my life. And I did that for a year. And that was the kind of man he was. And we are all so fortunate. Thank you.
Jack.
I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. My name is Jack Kissel. I've been sober 28 days, 2 months, and 35 years. And I'm grateful for every day of it. Yeah. Curtis mentioned Joe Moats, and Joe was my grand sponsor. And triggered a memory of mine. The first guy that ever asked me to sponsor him, I was 9 months sober. I was 9 months sober, and my sponsor said, "You can't do that until you got a year." So my guy waited until I got a year, and then he asked me. And he had 9 months when he was doing his ninth step, and he decided to turn himself in for sentencing. He had several charges, which he had escaped up to that time. And so he got in front of the judge, and Joe Moach kept telling us that he would be okay. And I passed the word on, but when he came out, we picked him up, I saw a toothbrush in his coat pocket there, you know. He wasn't planning on getting out. And we stood in front of the judge, and the judge says, "Who are these men?" We all had shirts and ties. He said, "Who are these men that are here interested in you?" And he pointed to Joe, and he said, no, he pointed to me. He said, "That's my sponsor." And he pointed to Fred Ellis, and he said, "That's his sponsor." And he pointed to Joe Moats, and he said, "That's his sponsor." And that was, I've never forgotten that. It was, and the judge expunged his record. He let him go, gave him 3 years of probation. He never went to jail, and he had a lot of charges against him. And when he finished, the judge said, I'm going to expunge your record. And we walked outside. He was just kind of a street-educated kid. He didn't, you know, he had trouble with language sometimes. He called me once and said, "They called me up to the Palladium today," you know. And I didn't like the floor mat of that meeting too well. And when we got outside the courtroom, he said, "What does expunge mean, man?" And he still calls me. He lives in Philadelphia. He's got about 10 years, and he still calls me. It's an amazing grace. It is just an amazing grace. My first sponsor, Fred Ellis, died when I was 15 and a half years sober. I often say of exhaustion. But I was 2 years after he died, and I still didn't have a sponsor, and people that I was sponsoring kept asking me, "Do you have a sponsor?" I told him I was interviewing, you know. And then one day I realized that Don Gates had been in my life since the first year. He'd always been there. And so I called him and I said, "Would you be my sponsor?" And he said, "Well, I don't sponsor people." I said, "The hell you don't. Milton Merle calls you all the time, and Louis the Preston, I kept naming a bunch of people." He said, "Yeah, but I never had a sponsor." I said, "You did too. You called Chuck Chamberlain every week for all the time he was alive." And he said, "Yeah, but he didn't let you call him sponsor. He said he would be your friend." And I said, "Okay, well, could we do that?" And he said, "Sure, yeah, we'll do that. Now be down at my chambers on Wednesday, and here's what I want you to do." I want you to write a little inventory of everything that, you know, led up to your getting sober, and I want to hear the last 15 and a half year or 17 years it was. I want you to, you know, straighten it all out. Be at my chambers on Wednesday, and we had lunch, and he's been my friend ever since. Thank you.
Yo.
I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm real honored to be here today. In 1971, in September the 15th, I stood before Judge Emerson here, and I haven't seen him since, you know, and I stood in front of him, and I'm weighing about 100 pounds. And I'm trying to hold on to my pants, and my sister's right next to me. And and I told him, "I'm Joe Trejo," you know. And he goes, "Oh yeah, I've been looking for you for the last 6 months. What are you doing here?" You know. And I said, Your Honor, I'm here. I plead guilty. Just put me in jail. I'm tired. I'm tired of the streets, you know. And he's looking through my files and stuff, and he says, well, boy, you got a problem here, kid, huh? And I look behind me, and there's a whole bunch of people in the courtroom, and I go, God, what is this judge saying in front of all these people? You know, he's ranking it for me, you know. And he said, I've got an idea. He said, if there is a program that I think you should try, and I want to talk to you in my chambers. And I said, I told my sister, no, man, I just want to go to jail, you know. I don't want to go to no program. And my sister was there trying to hold me up, kind of, and she said, what have you got to lose? Why don't you listen to him, you know? It might work for you, you know. And I said, no, I don't want nothing to do with programs. And she says, go ahead, you know, get in there and see what he's got to say. And I was scared to death, you know. And he recessed the court, and I go, Jesus Christ, what is this judge doing? And everybody split and everything. And he told the guard to leave the chambers, and I go, Jesus Christ, you know. And he made me feel important or something, you know. I said, what the heck is going on? And, you know, he says, there's a program. It's a 12-step program. And it's a new way of life, you know. And he says, Joe, why don't you try it for 90 days? He says, there's no bars, no fences, you know. Try it for 90 days. And if you don't like it, you can leave. There's no guards there. There's no, you know, wardens there, you know. And try it for 90 days. If you don't like what you see, he says, go ahead and leave, and I'll have your ass picked up again and throw you back in jail, you know. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing, you know what I mean? I couldn't believe, because I had never heard of any programs. You know, the only programs that I knew was the old Hall of Justice. You know, you went over there, you dried up, and then you came out, and you did it all over again. You know, that was a routine, you know. And I remember him saying, he says, and I said, well, what about this felony that I have? He says, don't worry about it. Just try this program. And I'm not making any promises. And I said, okay. He says, you know, Joe, he says, when you get in this program, you're going to meet a lot of people from different walks of life. I go, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, and he says, but you're going to meet one very important person. And I'm waiting for the answer. And I said, well, who's that? And he says, that's you. And I go, what's he talking about, you know? And I thought I knew me, see, and that was my dilemma. See, I didn't know me, and I never wanted to know me, you know. And I was afraid to find out who I was, you know, much more exposed to anybody else. You know, and then he told me another thing that I haven't forgotten to this day, you know. He said, stick around with the winners. And I said, well, who's that? Everybody who's got Cadillacs and Rolls Royces and all that? He says, no. He says, the winners are the ones that are staying sober, you know. And, you know, for the grace of God, I haven't had to go out there and drink again, take another drink pill or whatever, you know. And in a few days, in September of 15th, I'm going to have 35 years. And that's a miracle for me, you know. Miracles do happen in this program. See, I was afraid to change, you know. I was afraid to change. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that's what I needed to do, you know. And I used to feel different from other people, you know, so-called normies or whatever, you know. I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous that I am part of the human race. You know, I used to think that, no, you know, I'm from the other side of the tracks, man. I'm different. I'm, you know, blah, 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 this. You know, the only thing that I found out here that I'm different is that I do have a disease. And this disease is, all I have to do is arrest it, man. And I found out how to do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
All right. Mel, come on up.
My name is Mel. I'm an alcoholic. First thing I want to do is remind Keith, if anything happens to John, don't call me. I'm really pleased to be here. I'm honored to be with a lot of friends, people I've known for a lot of years. My sobriety date is October the 7th, 1968. So that means in a few weeks, too, I'll hit a birthday. And I didn't know if this thing was ever going to work, but boy, it sure did. When I walked in here, I had optical rectitis. I don't know if anybody's ever familiar with that. But my optical nerve was coupled with my rectal nerve, and I had a real crappy outlook on life. And I hated me and hated the world, and I didn't want nothing to do with anything. And I bogarted my way in here. I bounced around like a ping pong ball, and people tried to corner me and settle me down, you know, because I was just bouncing off the walls, and I didn't know if I really wanted what you had, but I didn't want what I had, and I didn't want to go back to the penitentiary. So I went to meetings, and I met people, and I got a sponsor, the guy I met inside, too, Eddie Cochran. He's dead, and they told me if I ever mentioned his name, he'd show up here someplace, he'd be sitting, and I'm hoping he's here today. And I followed him for 30 years. I followed him in this program for 30 years, and he never told me any lies. He always told me the truth. He never told me what to do, but if I had a question, he'd give me an answer. And I thought that was really comfortable for me. And I loved that man. I really did. When he passed, I too am one that believes that you have to have a sponsor. You can't walk this planet by yourself. You need somebody to be accountable to, no matter what. You need to show who you are to somebody else, and when you stumble, they can pick you up and they'll tell you what you need to do. And I'm grateful for people. I wound up with another fellow, and he passed on, and I hooked up with Gordon, and I pray every day he stays alive. You know, I don't really want to go looking for anybody else. You know, you've been around here for a while. It's hard to find people that's got quality that you can depend on. So when I first got here, I listened to you talk about steps. Steps were really fun. I thought people that were working the steps seemed to be happier. But for me, I got involved with activities like parties and, you know, picnics. I got involved with anything but action. Action was taking a good hard look at me and saying, "You're a fool, Mel." Started writing some stuff down, and it wasn't, you know, it's like I heard it said once before, you don't wake up in the morning singing zippity-doo-dah and say, "I'm going to work the four steps." It's just something you just don't do. It's until you get into pain, a lot of it, I mean major pain, before you sit down and take a good hard look at yourself and want to do some changes. And I wound up in some pain, some serious pain, and several people here know about some of that pain, and I got down to working the steps, and I decided, you know, I'm going to make this thing work. I want to be as happy as some of the other people I know. I want to feel the freedom inside that other people have. I want to be able to sponsor people and watch them stay sober. That's the key. If you don't work the steps, it's hard to share the steps with somebody else. You can't go around saying, "Hey, if it works for you, I'll try it." You know, because a lot of people do that. I realize it's got to work for me before I can ever share it with somebody else. I love what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's like I've been already said, it's given me a way of life that I can sit down and be my own best friend instead of my own worst enemy. I no longer have to hide from myself. I can look you square in the eye, I can tell you who I am, and I don't have any fear. I don't feel any pain inside. I know that the grace of God is with me. If I was to die today, I've got all the stuff cleaned up from underneath the rug. All my things are done, and I keep a good slate for myself today, that I don't make any major mistakes, though I'm human and I can. But you people helped me, and I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. And Keith, thanks for inviting me, man. What a pleasure to be here with my friends. And it's just really good to be here, and the meal, oh, delicious. Thanks.
Ed.
My name is Ed Palmquist. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is October the 4th, 1966. My sponsor is Bud McDonald. And Al-Anon, my date is July the 1st, 1970. My sponsor was A.B. Elias. And I commingle the two. I love them both dearly. I feel that I'm here with royalty, with three people that were here when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were very, very important in my life. And I'm also here with royalty, with Judge Emerson and Bud McDonald, who started the court cards. And for those of you that come in on court cards, you can go up and thank them for the work that they did. It was hard work, took years, and they saved many, many lives. I want to thank the people who came over in their Mercedes and picked us up. Holy Toledo. Another thing that happened a few years back, a person came down. I was really, really sick, and a person came down from Dana Point and got a group together that they watchdogged me for a week, and they wouldn't let me answer the phone, and they were all alcoholics, so I've had some royal treatment in here. If you're new, stay around here. One word can change your life forever. Thank you much. Terrify the red light.
Howard.
I am Howard, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. I always had a resentment towards Ed. He took his first inventory with me. He never asked me to be a sponsor. And I had 3 weeks on him. When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was one sick cookie, let me tell you. I was just going through my second divorce, had a gun in my mouth, and looked over, and there was about that much left in a bottle of Thunderbird. So first I checked the gun to see if it would fit my mouth, and it did. So I figured I better call my babysitter, my sister Wanda. Every time I got drunk, I called her and told her what was wrong with the whole world. And if everybody would have just listened to me, things would have been a lot better. Anyway, I told my sister Wanda, I said, I'm going to kill myself. And she says, when? She says, the family would be a lot better off without you, Howard. You have caused so much problems and so much trouble. We won't miss you. Matter of fact, we probably won't even go to the funeral. Well, you know, you tell an alcoholic to go north, and we're going to back up and go south. When she told me that, I lost it, you know. I said some few choice words, and I hung up. And she really hurt my feelings. I looked over, and there was that Thunderbird. And so I drank that, and I passed out, and I came to the next morning. And 2 weeks before that, I had a brother-in-law tell my dad and mother, you better come, they lived in Northern California. He said, you better come down and put Howard in Norwalk State Hospital because he's lost it. He's absolutely crazy. So they came down, they spent the weekend with me, and I figured he was going to come down and write me a blank check. You know, they're going to, you know, bail me out, get me out of trouble, but they didn't do that. they was leaving on the weekend. They went through the gate, and when they went through the gate and got in their car, you know us alcoholics. We know when the door is shut. We know when every hole is plugged and every avenue is plugged. This is it. I knew my last wife, when she left me, I knew she would never be back. My last wife left me 3 times in a matter of 4 months, and every time she came back, I had to celebrate and I got drunk. But the last time, you can feel when people are leaving you and they're not coming back, and I felt this was it, you know? So I really went on a drunk. And I passed out, came to again, and I picked up the phone. I was so miserable. When my sister told me, go ahead and kill yourself, I said, I'm going to show her. So I called up my first nursemate, which was my first wife, and I said, I need help. Could you call somebody? So she called. She looked in a phone book, and she called a place called A Hole in the Ground. And they asked her, is he drunk? And she said, well, certainly he's drunk. Well, you can bring him down at 10 o'clock in the morning and we'll see what we can do with him. So I did. I went down and I wouldn't get out of the car because it was the hole in the ground. It was called the email club. But to me, it looked like a church. And I said to my wife, I'm not going down there. That's a church. You're not getting me down there. She said, it's not a church. So they finally got me down there. They gave me the 20 questions, red carpet treatment. I got 100%. And I knew, you know, and Dick Shue, my buddy Dick Shue was there. And I was telling everybody on this part of the room what a nut my ex-wife was. And my ex-wife was telling me what a nut I was. And my buddy Dick Shue was trying to pick up my wife. But to make a long story short, the greatest thing that ever happened to me is that I made it to the hole in the ground. Because if I would have made it into a silk sheet drunk place, I would never have made it. When I first sat there today, and Keith got up and told these guys, you go out there and sit down and eat your food out there, I thought I was at the hole in the ground. When I got at the hole in the ground, the very first night, Ford, his name was Ford, and he was an umpire. And Jim Farwell was celebrating 21 years, and they started talking about the AA program and all this, and they started talking about the Navy, and I stood up and I was drunk. I knew all about the Navy. Let me tell you something. And Jim Farwell took one look at me and said, shut up and sit down. You can't tell us anything. You're drunk. So what I want to tell everybody, the newcomers, no matter what they tell you, keep coming back. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Howard. That was everybody between 30 and 39. So we're moving on to 40 here. We're going to start with Ed. Ed D.
My name's Ed, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a type A. That means I oppose time. So when you're drinking and driving, why, that's a bad combination. I got sober July 29th, 1966. 1966, right before I got sober, I was in New York to a reliability conference. That's an engineering conference. Reliability was way down on the list for me. I attended as a Monday morning, 9 o'clock through Friday noon. I attended the first hour Monday morning. And from then on, I was on a run. They told me where I worked, North American Aviation, to go to the central office, whatever that was. So I, 9 o'clock, I went to the central office. The receptionist said, would you like to talk to, I don't know, what the hell was the name? So I went in and talked to him. I was had a hell of a hangover. And this is a AA office, central office in New York. And it was the damnedest office I ever seen. There's a diagonal from corner to corner. One corner was a linoleum floor and a kitchen table, and the other corner was a carpeting on the floor. So I talked to this guy, didn't know who the hell he was. So I managed to explain the big book to him. And I had a hangover. I spent 45 minutes with him. And he said, would you like to send the little 12 and 12 to somebody? And I said, sure. I sent it to my temporary sponsor, who was a lady. And 5 years later, I was in her apartment with a bunch of people on Super Bowl. And she said, there's the book you sent me. And her name was Josephine, went by the name of Joe. So I opened the book, and it was signed in a little note there to little Joe, signed by Bill W. So I spent 45 minutes with Bill W., didn't know who the hell he was. But I did explain the big book to him. So I celebrated 40 years on July 29th. And there's no question about it, this program saved my life. My daughter has got 5 years in the AA. My other daughter is in Overeaters Anonymous. She weighs 105 pounds now. So they're all very familiar with the 12 steps. I thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. I'm Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. And to the new people, also a drug addict. A little bit of everything else, too. I'm real glad to be here today, Keith. It's always good to see you. I was telling Sue that I've been kind of depressed lately, and it's like in May, all those people died out there by me, and then, you know, Ron here. And then I get a call Tuesday that Big Book Mac died, and it's like I just kind of, every time I come to this territory, I kind of get depressed anymore. I came down and spoke at the Anaheim Club, and man, I lived there. I lived there. It kept me sober for years. You know, the nuttiest people around were at the Anaheim Club, right, John? And so many of them are dead now, you know, and I went to the hospital and talked about 2 months ago. Then I went to the club and talked, and there wasn't a single person there that I knew, you know. And it gets lonely up here. my husband died about 2.5 years ago, and he never did make the program. He's been around longer than most of us, but he could never make it. And I guess I grieve him, and I keep bouncing back and forth with all the people that we've lost. And personally, I'm kind of like the gentleman that sat down when I first got here. I just talk. Remember, John, they used to say, I went to the Tuesday night meeting the first time I got sober, the Tuesday night meeting when I got sober again, and they said, she's the only one can keep talking until 10:15, and it's time to go. But I was thinking about him saying that, you know, that he told Bill Wilson all about the big book, and I think about all the shit I could tell you. You know, and if you think you're not nuts, you're only BSing yourself, believe me, because I was insane many years after I got sober. And I've done a lot of insane things since I've been sober also. You know, when you live with an addict for 30 years, you're pretty sick. Although I used to say that some of the men in AA could have picked up some of his qualities, just because he was a user didn't mean he didn't have good qualities, you know, and other things. And I'm like everybody else that got up here. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I still love it. To those of you that are carrying court cards out in San Bernardino County, I teach DUI school. They do not have to go to AA meetings. And Eddie Cochran worked with me before he passed away. And him and about 5 other guys where I work quit working in 1994 because they no longer had to go to AA meetings. And it's real hard talking to those guys. And they get real mad at me because naturally, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. Without it, you know, I can't make it. We were talking earlier about still going to meetings. And a lot of these guys, you know, they get me on a roll and I talk for 2 hours and it's straight about Alcoholics Anonymous. And they went, well, why do you still go to meetings, Pat? And I said, you know, most of the time I'm pretty peaceful today compared to what I used to be. But when I get a resentment, the resentment is just like it was 40 years ago. It eats me alive. I've got to sit down. I've got to write about it. I've got to call somebody. You know, none of that changes. But I noticed that even after all these years, if I'm going to meetings on a steady basis every week, 2 or 3 meetings, I seem to be mellow all the time. It's when I back off and I don't make that 3 a week, you know, and then all of a sudden the crap from old days comes back. And I choose to believe that people go out, it's because they don't go to meetings. They're not reminded of who they were and what they were. And I don't know about the other old timers, but, you know, sometimes I sit down and I feel like it was yesterday when I took the last drink. I can still visualize the whole thing, you know. And God gave me a couple of gifts. I can tell you right now, if I stood here and I thought about a bottle of wine, I could taste it in about 2 minutes. You know, I call that a gift. You may not, but I do call it a gift. I quit smoking 3 packs a day 33 years ago, April. And, you know, I'm not a reformed smoker either. You want to smoke, light up. They still smell good to me. It's a hell of an addiction. You know, I love to smell them when you light them up. And, you know, I'm not a used to be of anything, really. And I'm not against anybody doing anything. You know, I still, like the guys in my groups at DUI, they say, but Pat, you've been sober 40 years. Why do you think that you can't drink? And I said, because I know I don't. And when you get honest with yourself, if I've never been honest with myself about anything, I am about alcohol and drugs. Ever since the day I picked it up, I've been running with it. I don't believe in one little drink. I believe in getting loaded when you're going to get loaded and stay loaded as long as you can. I don't work, you know, I don't do anything when I use and drink. I just run the streets. And here, I do it all. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a lady, and I hated that word, but I am a lady. And I do go to Al-Anon too, Kate. You know, when you live with an addict, you need to learn to ask them girls how they learned how to live with it, and I did. You know, I cornered them and asked them. Most of us drunk girls don't know how to live with them, you know. We're battling it out, you know, who's going to have the biggest mind there. But, you know, AA has just gave me a lot of stuff. I could stand up here for an hour because once I get started, I can go on and on and on about Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, funny thing is, when these guys ask me that, I always say, how come they don't ever say anything to a person that's been going to church every week for 40 years, you know? Why do they, you know, if they knew what we had here, they'd keep coming back here too. So I thank God that I found it, and I'm glad that God found me. Thank you.
John?
My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic. And I haven't had a drink all day today. That makes me 100% successful in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether the old-timers like it or not. When I got here, I didn't like old-timers. They were too damn grouchy. They acted just like my father. And I didn't want what they had, and I didn't know what the hell they had. But I didn't want what I had either. And I kept coming back, and I met Pat. And my insides felt like her outsides looked, you know, because she was very sad and looked lonely, you know, and I was sort of getting a crush on her. She never knew this. The first time I ever brought it out to anybody, And I never bought into the God stuff, and I was called all kinds of names by 12-step people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I knew there was a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that had a complete closed mind more than I ever did. But I had to learn how to deal with it and stay sober. And this is why I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I flat didn't want to drink anymore. It quit working for me. And I kept going to meetings and I kept hating what I was hearing, but I wasn't drinking, and newcomers was the only thing that was saving my ass. There was 12-step work every night. And that's the only thing that I ever found in Alcoholics Anonymous that had the power to get my mind off of me. I have never found anything else yet. And one thing, I become grateful for my first sponsor, old Lou Mullins. He's never told me how to work a program. He told me what he did and left the choice up to me. And I didn't like his program. I didn't like anybody's program. And I didn't have one. But I was learning to have one working with newcomers. And not teaching them program, just introducing them to people that I knew in Alcoholics Anonymous. Going to meetings with them. Sharing how I felt was, most of the time, was miserable. I used to talk about the honesty in this program. And I used to try to get honest, and I'd come home and tell my Al-Anon wife that I don't know if I'm in love with you or my first wife. I was so screwed up. I've been a failure at suicide, sober and drunk. And today I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic. I feel like I finally amounted to something. And if you don't think being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous isn't something, just try it. Now, I'd like to welcome the newcomers. But be careful who you listen to. When I got so damn confused, I started thinking for me, and they taught me not to think for myself. But when I listened to them, I sure as hell didn't want what they had. And they told me I was going to get drunk because I couldn't buy into the God stuff. I got my doorknob here tonight. Thanks to Jerry. You see, and I started wearing that and using that at meetings to piss off the old-timers. Because they used to say, if you can't buy the God stuff, make it a doorknob. And I said, how stupid can you get? So I'd wear it at meetings and watch them squirm sometimes, you see. Like I used to squirm when I'd hear them. Shut up and listen. Work the steps in a row. That's what I had written. That's not been my experience. The experience I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous freed me inside. I never could buy into a God, and I never can now. And when I hear at meetings, I'm grateful that I don't. Because I sure as hell don't want what they got. But I like what I'm getting. I have a freedom that I've never experienced in my life since I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to stand on my own two feet And I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous, they can't make a move now unless they see their sponsor or God. And I make decisions now, a lot of times they're wrong. And I experience that. And a lot of times they're right. And I'll take the experience for that too. I take some of the experience for my sobriety because I'm the one that's got to get off my ass and go to meetings. I'm the one that's got to work through the problems that I have. And I ask people that I feel might have an answer for me because they might have went through the same stuff they did. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to stand on my own two feet. And there was a time when I hated Al-Anon, and today I truly believe that Al-Anon is the spiritual foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I go to some of their meetings, I listen to the pain that they had, and they didn't have the booze to chase their pain away. You see? And I watched the shit that I handed to my wife in my sobriety, which was worse than I ever did when I was drunk. I'm supposed to shut up now, so I hope you keep coming back.
Gene.
Hi, my name's Gene. I'm an alcoholic. And in an event like this, I can't help but think back. I'm extremely lucky. I think the first person I had to ask was an old gal named Marge with the H&I committee who brought Alcoholics Anonymous into a federal prison in Fort Worth, Texas. And I was in there, you know. And it was fitting for me. I never complained about every jail I was ever in. They designed them for people like me, you know. I remember kidding around in a Texas prison one time about, you know, it was so nice to be in there, safe from all them out there. And this old convict, God, he'd done 35 years or 40. He said, Gene, they didn't put you in here to protect you from them. They put you in. Anyway, so I'm really grateful to Marge. She used to come in, and I was a young man. I wasn't old enough to drink. I'd had a smuggling beef, and I was a drug addict. It wasn't popular. It's not popular today. I didn't like it either. And but I'd go to the H&I meetings, you know, and I went by accident. I got there, and I got off the shooting gallery. They called it a detox ward. We called it a shooting gallery. And there were a couple of guys there that I'd been to other institutions with, and we were having ice cream with cantaloupe. And one guy looked, and he said, it's time, and they all got up. And I just went with them, you know. And they were going to the H&I meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in that federal prison in Fort Worth, Texas, and I tagged along. And I became impressed. At first I wasn't, you know. And I think I went every week for a while. And after about a month, somebody explained to me they didn't get paid. And I don't know why that impressed me, you know. It just did, you know, because everybody I'd ever met acted like they wanted to do something for me, usually wanted something from me, you know. And you know, I thought they did, you know. I was a guy that didn't have much trust. But anyway, I'm grateful to Marge, and after a while I'd say, you know, talk to her, and she kind of liked me. Ladies kind of liked me sometimes, not so much anymore, but they did then. God. Anyway, I'm grateful to some of the women I've met. All of them, really. But anyway. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, and she'd say, honey, when you get out, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know why that impressed me. The only person in my life who had ever called me honey was my grandmother. And usually when my dad would go to jail or he'd punch my mom out or whatever, she'd take me out in the backyard and pick strawberries, and she'd put cream on them, and she would call me honey, you know. And here's old Marge, you know. Calling me honey, and she'd say, when you get out, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd say, but Marge, I'm a dope fiend. She'd say, honey, when you get out, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know, and she didn't know. She didn't speak for all you guys. And I'm glad I didn't know, because when I got out, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was what they called a two-sooner in Dallas, Texas, see. They used to think if you got here too soon, you couldn't be alcoholic. And the young people's meeting, they were in their 40s, and I think I was still 21 or something, you know. But I went to those meetings, you know, and my first sponsor was a guy named Alan Edwards. And he taught me a lot of things. I didn't utilize them all, but he taught me a lot of things. And I was still a thief, you know. I thought I had a handle on life, and that never worked. I thought manual labor was a Mexican I hadn't met yet, but... God, that's a joke. But anyway, only amuses me. Some of you are stupid enough, you laugh too. But anyway, Alan, I remember I went to see Alan. Alan, he was sober about 20 years. His mother was sober about 30 years. He was an artist. He was a world-famous artist. And anyway, I remember I went to see him, and he bought a new car. It was one of the little Fords, you know, when they came with it. I forget what they call it, you know, but you guys will know. A little bitty Ford, you know. And I pulled up in my new 1958 Packard, it was 1957, I'd bought it, you know, and I had a tailor-made silk suit on, the Homburg hat, and Alan wore Bond's clothes, and I felt sorry for him, you know, and I said, Alan, you know, you make a good living. He just built the Caribbean Hilton Hotel in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and then he did the one in Cairo, Egypt, and then he did one in Berlin, you know. So he had a lot of money, and I remember telling him, I can introduce you to my tailor, man. You can dress better than that. And my car dealer, you know, we can help you out. And he said in a very quiet voice, as he knows, he says, I believe the money comes my way, belongs to my father. And he was talking about the Creator. And he said, I think my task is to do what he would have me do with it, to serve other people. And I thought, oh, my God, what hokey shit. But it had to ring the truth, and it was to disturb me for a long period of time. And he taught me a lot of other little things like that. And I went to their meetings in June 1953, and I never drank again after that, and I still haven't. But I had that other problem. And in 1958, I got shot by a pimp. You know, another argument, you know. And I tried to, 22 shell kind of, you know, but not the shell, but the bullet. It splinters in you, you know, and I was trying to dig it out, and I started getting gangrene, and I couldn't go to a doctor or a hospital because they called the police, and I was on federal parole, and, you know, I'd had a weapon in that fracas too, you know, and so I found somebody that knew this lesbian veterinarian, and she'd dig anything out of you and not call the police, you know. And I was kind of fidgeting as she's digging, you know, and she said, you need a shot of morphine. I thought it's medicinal, so I took it, and I went back to shooting heroin. And I went to prison in Texas. And anyway, I got out April 2nd, 1964, and several people helped me out. My first sponsor was Eddie Cochran. I never called him, but I felt secure. I had one just in case. And some other people helped me tremendously. Don Gates was a big help to me. I had a mandatory life sentence in the state of Texas. I turned myself in because I prayed, and God indicated he thought I should go. Maybe I was just hearing shit. And I went. People in Alcoholics Anonymous wrote a stack of letters 3 inches tall, and I did less than a year on a mandatory life sentence, and I can't explain that. So I owe you my life more than once, and I'm talking too long. Red lights, I thought, were just a stop. You get tickets, so I'm going to get one.